Time Cop.
Okay.
That's where I'm going with this.
Okay.
Okay. Hello, hello, and welcome. I'm Nick.
I'm Ryan.
And welcome to the Liku Studios Podcast, Roundtable number 25, Fire Emblem Awakening.
Podcast for the week of February the 10th.
I saw a centipede that was made out of hearts, and it had a heart butt.
Like a wiggler, you mean?
Kind of, yeah.
Because, like, there's been a modern resurgence in interest in the wiggler.
Yeah, he was in Mario Kart 7.
Yeah.
As a
best part of Mario Kart 7. See, although now, I still kind of like the customization stuff.
In the next one, I want a wiggler cart. Like, I would like to ride around on a wiggler.
I feel like there's been one in the past. Wasn't there, like, a wiggler cart that had, like, a cute parasol on top of it?
No, because the parasols were only in Mario Kart 7, so you must be talking about 7,
some kind of flowery canopy.
Oh, no, there might be one in Double Dash. There were a bunch of canopies in Double Dash.
Yeah.
The only time I played Double Dash was in a Double Dash tournament, and it didn't go well.
Double Dash is pretty good.
I wouldn't mind getting my hands on some Double Dash.
Yeah.
Doing a complete Mario Kart retrospective. We haven't done that yet.
A complete Mario Kart retrospective.
Yeah.
Just like start from SNES and go?
Yeah. Come on, that's like a video series.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about my idea for like the Sonic Generation video series?
No.
I just wanted...
Yes, yeah. You did, actually. You want to revisit the levels and the levels.
Yeah. Because why not?
Yeah.
And then just rip on every... So...
just be a big grump.
I actually, if this is the start of a podcast where we talk about what we've been playing, I actually went back and played a little bit of Sonic Colors.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I just, like, just a taste of it. Just touch
it. Yeah,
yeah. Because basically the idea is, after the last time I was in a discussion about modern Sonic games,
mm-hmm.
The idea was brought up that, like, the way you play Sonic games now is basically all about, like, replaying levels over and over again rather than about, like, the journey to the death egg zone at the end and whatever. And it's actually about, you know, going along, finding everywhere the patch splits, and then basically, like almost like, you know, a less in-depth sort of speedrun kind of thing. So it's like, okay, do I go here? Do I use Beast's boost here? So I was just like, all right, let me try playing a Sonic game with that in mind. And it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually pretty cool, and I think it would be kind of dope to do it, like I was saying, like, make that, you know, another, like, you know, dollars on the table kind of game. It's just like, all right, here's my dollar, here's your dollar. We're going to go back and forth playing the same level, and then just the first one to not beat the previous fastest time is a loser or something like that.
Huh.
Because it's very much about that. It's just about, like, all right, you know, I want to make sure I make this jump so I get this rail, and that's one shortcut. I want to make sure, you know, here's a group of, like, 50 enemies or 12 enemies to get across this chasm. But if you know, like, exactly which ones are, like, the shortest path across the chasm,
mm-hmm.
If you know about this secret area, about, you know, just checking all these things.
I would say yes, but give everyone, like, a run through the level before you put in money on the table.
Or do it, like, kind of like how Top Gear used to do their, whatchamacallit. Early on, the way Top Gear did their, like, celebrity lap times was, like, everybody gets, like, 5 laps, and then they just take whatever your highest was during that time, instead of being, like, 3 practices and then a real one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, if you were a fan of the old Sonic games, it is, like, a pretty major shift in the way you think about them. Like, just think about it gameplay-wise. Because the old ones did have, you know, some of that, like, you know, find the best path, find this. But a lot of it was, I don't know, I always found it, like, it was very enjoyable as just, like, a, you know, see new things, see new gimmicks, make it to the end, try to beat the whole game.
Go to the carnival zone or the pinball zone.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is in that particular game.
Like, it was almost more of an adventure than, like, a speed game.
Mm-hmm.
I just find in a new game, like, that doesn't work as well if that's what you're going into it for. But going in for it like this, like, it's actually, it's a way to enjoy those games that makes a lot of sense.
I don't know, when we played Colors, I really liked when we got to, like, Underwater Samurai Land.
Yeah.
Like, just in terms of getting to a new place and seeing a new thing, that was some nice new thing to look at.
Yeah. Well, and that's still why my argument is that, like, of the modern Sonic games, Sonic Colors is the best, because in no other game have I had a missile full of jelly beans shot at me.
Or turned into, like, a laser floater or whatever.
Yeah, no other game has been sort of a simulation of what it is to live life as a blimp. My life as a teenage blimp, that was it. but this idea of, like, you know, like the sort of speed run high score sort of mentality, like, it makes sense because they started introducing it around Sonic Adventure, but, like, you look at it and that's an idea that actually carries over because that's in Generations. I think that was in 2006. That might be, I don't know if I ever played Heroes, but looking at it that way, that sort of makes sense. And I'm sure there are games that are even doing that better than others, but, like, just overall sort of be like, okay, now I see what there is to see in the Sonic games.
Do any of these games have leaderboards?
Yeah. Sonic Generations has leaderboards. That's on 360. That has all that sort of support.
Okay.
Even Colors actually has, like, a leaderboard mode.
Cool.
And stuff like that. So
it kind of seems like it's more suited for, like, a whiteboard in a basement, though.
Yeah, right? Let me tell you two facts, like, about a current situation.
I see the deathmatch screen over there.
The whiteboard is behind the...
Oh, okay. Oh, door. Yeah, so it is.
Yeah.
Like, talking about it like that, it feels very arcadey to me.
It's
like
kind
it's a
of...
simple game. Like, there's not a lot of depth to it in terms of what you can do. Just find the best way to do it and then do it.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing. Like, if it didn't have a world map, it would be extremely arcadey. And then I realized something that I actually unlocked when I beat the game is challenge mode, which is start from the beginning and beat every level in sequence.
Nice.
And that's the version that has the leaderboards and keeps track of how long you played for and how far you made it into the game.
Okay.
On, like, a set amount of lives with level ups in the game.
Nice.
Which that is, like, I played for maybe a good, like, 40 minutes straight playing that one. So it's really not the best, like, kind of trade-off way to play that game. Like, I don't know if I would do that with people, but that is an enjoyable way to play that game.
Like, isn't there stuff in that game where, like, you get the ability to transform into a new thing, and then you can use that in, like, previous levels to see new shit?
I think so. I never really played around with that, but yes, okay. Like, that is an like going through the game now, like, certain levels will have, like, two or three different transformations, when I think the first time you play it, there's only, like, one thing per world or something like that. So that's... And that adds a new level to it, because that's, like, you know.
And then in challenge mode, do you have all of those, or do you still kind of unlock them sequentially?
Yeah, you have them.
Oh, okay, cool.
But that's the thing, like, that adds to all the different ways to, like, shortcut. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's a couple of levels I was playing that you can basically just play by just running in a straight line and just knowing when
like
to
Sonic.
Jump and slide. But there's a lot of places where you can do the drilling and go in and you know, check out these different places, and a couple of them actually seem like they are, like, super shortcuts if you just put in the time to do the exploring.
One of the transformations in that game was just, like, into a reflect laser, right?
Yeah.
God, that game's pretty good.
Yeah. And it has, like, an actual two-player mode.
It does?
I think it's kind of weird. Like, I think it's sort of like a tag two-player mode.
Okay.
I think it's something worth exploring in this idea. And because, like, there's probably going to be a Sonic podcast at some point once I play a bit more of Generations, yep. Unless it just gets developed into a video series.
Okay. That could be an interesting video series.
All right.
Hey, guys.
So you remember last week when we were all nuts about Fire Emblem?
We've had a lot of fun here today, but it's time to talk about something serious, you guys.
So Fire Emblem came out.
Yeah, this game's really good.
That game's really...
It's been out for, like, a solid week now, and... We actually just learned today that we're about the same place in the story, like, progression-wise, which is just amazingly fortunate.
Yeah.
Because I've been doing a lot of, like, relationship grinding in this Swords and Sorcery and relationshiping game.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Fire Emblem, Nick.
All right. Where do we start?
What is your context for Fire Emblem? Because we haven't gotten... Like, you know, historically speaking, like, we only started getting Fire Emblem games in the U.S. with the GBA releases.
Right.
Of, what, Sacred Stones and what was the first one on GBA?
The first one was just Fire Emblem, and then Sacred Stones, I believe, was a follow-up to that.
Okay. Yeah, it probably was just called Fire Emblem, because it's not like we had one before.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if there was one on the GameCube, and then there were a couple on the Wii, and I never played any of those.
There was one on the GameCube that was like a remake of an earlier one that we didn't get.
Oh, yeah, that's probably... Yes, there was a remake of the very first one with Marth.
Yeah.
But I never played any of those. I'm only familiar with the GBA ones. How about you?
Kind of similar. Like, for a long time, I was always confused. Like, I always had it... I mean, my history with Fire Emblem was I used to like Shining Force.
Okay.
But I never got very far in it because I did not have it, like, on a portable platform.
Hmm.
It's on the Dreamcast Sega Smash Hits pack.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
One of the Shining Force games is in there. But those, like, were always, like, super awesome, and I always wanted to play more of those.
Mm.
And then around the time of the GBA, I was, like, constantly confused between Fire Emblem and Golden Sun.
Okay.
And then at some point, I was just like, all right, I'm just going to pick one. And then at some point, I bought a cart for Golden Sun, and I was like, this is the wrong one. So then I went and I got Fire Emblem, and I played a little bit of both of those.
Mm-hmm.
And they were pretty cool, but I never got too far in them because that was like, you know, when like you just play a game for a while and it's sort of like your side game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you know, they're like, if I have time to play something, this will not be it. This is just what I play on the bus or what I play on the,
yeah,
it's, you know, and then I was trading off between that and like Super Robot Wars. That was about the time they released the translation for J was about the same time that I got on that train. So, you know, I was playing that on the bus, too, and I also had it on my GBA, so it's like, I have like four or five of these games, and I'm not going to pay enough attention to get into any of them for too long.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sort of bounced around between those until here we are today.
Yeah, I was kind of the same way. I played the GBA ones in emulation context, where I had all sorts of other games to play, like Mega Man, and there was an Astro Boy GBA game that I played a bit of.
Yep, that was all right.
In my mind, for some reason, I always associated them with Breath of Fire, which was the SNES RPGs.
Yeah.
Which also has fire in the name and involves dragons.
Yep.
Not sure if there's actually any involvement, like any, you know, association between the two.
I don't think so.
Probably not. So, like, I've played Sacred Stones, primarily, was the one I'm more familiar with, and I never beat it because those games are hard.
Yeah.
And I never really learned them very well.
Mm-hmm.
So Awakening is the first one that I'm really, like, jumping in and getting more than, like, ankle deep in.
Yeah. Because this one is also doing... Part of what got me on the old ones is, like... They didn't have any of the grinding aspect, at least as far as I played.
So there was, like, a tower in Sacred Stones where you could kind of fight, like, non-story battles.
Yeah.
But I think there was a limited number of them, and there was a progression where they got harder and harder, so it was basically just, like, another track of escalating difficulty.
There was, in the one that I put a bunch of time into, I remember finding maps, like, certain scenarios
mm-hmm.
that on them, like, you would have, like, a town or, like, a shop or an armory a map, it had arenas on it.
Yeah.
And so I think that there was actually one point at which, like, I just had, like, you know, the one guy, the one enemy left on the map, and I was just like, you sit there, I'm going to go grind everybody at this arena for a little while.
But it was possible to just die in there.
Yeah. That's also the weird part. Like, I did not play that game, like, super safe scummy. Like, I actually, like, accepted deaths because they were very infrequent. Like, the one that I remember was, the one where you get the Pegasus Knight, and she showed up and then got killed on that map. And I was like, I can deal with that. I don't want anybody that fragile. It's like Darwinism, man.
Yeah, so if you're not familiar with Fire Emblem, they're like some... The comparison that I hear pretty often is they're like Advance Wars with permanent death.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're like Advance Wars with units that you level up and develop between battles, and also they have relationships with each other and get married and stuff.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. I don't know if, like, the getting married was in the previous ones.
There were support conversations in the back. They were in previous games.
Yeah.
They were not as upfront about them.
Yeah, no, they were all kind of like hidden, and you're kind of lucky if you got them. And yeah. I remember like a lot. I remember a lot more of like finding dudes on the battlefield that you had to find like the correct guy yeah. to speak to them.
I remember there was them. I was playing Sacred Stones a while back when I heard about Awakening because I was like, oh man, Fire Emblem, like, you know, and just had an itch to Satan itch, a
yeah.
thirst, a scratch. There's one mission in that game where you have to there's a Myrmidon to recruit, which is like a high crit swordsman guy.
Yeah.
And the way you recruit him is that you walk up the priestess who has no weapons that you just met in that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
You have to walk her through enemy lines and go talk to him. But if you like get close and don't do it, like don't get close enough to talk, he'll just walk up and murder her.
Yeah.
Like, these games have a reputation, and fairly so, of being kind of obtuse and really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Awakening scales down the difficulty somewhat and makes more apparent a lot of the mechanics that you might, like, not have grasped from previous games.
Yeah.
Like
the whole sort of surfacing of the, like, stats and just, like, just having everything on the touchscreen, and you just like, what does that do? You touch it and it'll tell you.
Yeah.
And like, I guess it's sort of like a translation issue, but like they do a good job of like telling you what you need to know about things. Mm. Like there's been very few things I was just like, I don't want to play with this because I don't understand it. And permanent death, there's, you know, weapons degrade over time everywhere. There's a lot of things where you like, you could kind of do it wrong and,
yeah.
and just goof yourself. But they just do a good job. Just like, listen, if you do this, and a lot of things do come down to a, what do you call it? To dice rolls. Because there's critical hit chance, there's chance to hit, mm-hmm. there's... But, like, the amount of damage that will be done is always...
Known.
Is constant and known, and just, like all the biggest important parts are always known, and then luck is just basically whether something better will happen
yeah.
for you.
So, basically, whenever you are, like, gauging whether or not you should do some action, like, you know specifically, like, okay, I will attack first, and then he does enough damage to kill me, but if he doesn't, then I can get the second attack in. Is this worth it to me? You know very specific things like that, and then it's just the chance of it, you know, the chance of it happening or not is the only thing that's up in the air.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's good that they let you know specifically, like, okay, look, if you do this, there are a couple possible outcomes.
Yeah. But that's the thing, like,
clicking.
That's a cell phone. But, like, basically, like, the information that they give to you is just this idea of, like, listen, at minimum, this is how things will go down. Things could probably go better than this.
They could probably go worse.
But, like more often, like the only thing that could really go worse, I feel, is, like, if your opponent gets a crit.
Yeah.
Because, like... Because your opponents don't pair up. The pairing up is a big thing, but we can
yeah.
get to that. But, like there's a chance that you can get, like, a second hit or that a support character will come in and help out, but the enemies never have support characters on them. So, and the support, like, support character actions are, like, the biggest thing besides the crits.
Yeah.
And even then, I don't think I've ever had an enemy crit any of my guys.
I've seen it happen before.
Yeah?
There's a couple times when you'll find like an enemy Myrmidon or just a dude who has a killing edge for whatever reason.
Yeah.
No,
you know what? I think I saw it happen once and then
you immediately restarted.
No. They did zero damage.
Oh yeah.
Like they went up against Frederick and they just... critted double hit and did no damage. Just before we, you know, get into some of those shipping mechanics, which are another big hook beyond permanent death, like, the comparison to Advance Wars kind of makes sense because it is that, you know, that, like, grid and turn-based tactics is all about positioning and, you know, putting your units together and attacking adjacent mm-hmm. squares and, you know, percentages and hit points and things like that. So, but I've always, you know, I don't know why people would think of that more readily than... Again, like a Shining Force, because like if you ever played a Shining Force back on the Genesis, like this is almost exactly like that,
mm-hmm.
except the thing that happened in that game, which I would kind of like here, is, you know, if somebody died there, then you would just have to like bring them to a priest and pay money to bring them back from the dead.
Mm. I heard mention that there's some item you can, like, there's something you can use to bring back a guy who's permanently died.
Really?
I haven't actually seen it in game yet, so I don't know if it's just like a rumor.
Man.
I've been trying not to read up too much about this game.
Yeah.
Because there is, as we'll get into, like, a lot of relationship stuff and, like, characters that may or may not be in your game depending on, like, who hooks up with who, and there's time travel children and all sorts of crazy bullshit.
Okay, so, like, that's, like, people are just like, yeah, it's a tactic game with permanent death. Like, the more notable thing I would say is, like, it is a tactics game with, like, support conversations, and yeah. as your units fight together and adjacent to each other and support each other in battle, like, there's a hidden stat about how much they like each other, and when that hits certain, like, checkpoints, then they will have, like, support conversations, and they mm-hmm. will get better, and they will, like, improve how well they battle with each other. And, like, I'm trying to think, I guess something like Valkyria Chronicles had a system like that.
Yep.
I don't know how much they went into it, like, the conversation behind it.
To me, it kind of reminds me of Persona, in a way, that it's more linked to the combat in this game, because the way you advance their relationships is just by having them fight together.
Yeah.
But it is this sort of idea that, like, okay, you have your battle mechanics over here, and then there's this side thing you can do that gives you these little storylines between characters, and also improves your, you know, your abilities in the fight.
Yeah, it feeds back into the battles.
So this has been in previous games. Like, there have been support conversations before, but they do a couple things that makes it more apparent that it's going on. And they specifically tell you how to do it, which never really happened in previous games. Like, whenever your people fight together and increase their relationship level, like, little hearts pop up on them on the map, so you know when it's happening.
Yep.
And unlike in previous games, the conversations themselves happen outside of battle now.
Yeah.
Because as far as I could tell in previous ones, like, it was just kind of a chance thing that, like, if you stood the right people next to each other, they might have a conversation.
No, I remember...
Like, I remember specifically in Sacred Stones, there was, like, an elemental affinity thing on their character page, and it was, like, people with the right elements can have support conversations with each other, and it was very obtuse. Like, in this, they very specifically show you, like, who can have relationships together and whether or not, like, they go to A rank or S rank or whatever, and they show you what your progress is and everything.
Yeah. And also, it's just kind of like, you know, anybody can improve the relationship with each other. Plus, they have the whole barracks thing, which is, like, a little extra random chance. It is based just sort of, like, on time, because, like, I will finish a level... I will finish a chapter, and it'll take me to the world map, and it'll be like, all right, because, you know, now this is going to pop up, and these people are going to have a conversation, and then, you know, what do you want to do next? And, like, if I just, like, stop there and save it for the night, I can put it down, wake up in the morning, check it again.
And there'll be, like, three new conversations.
Yeah, no, three new things have shown up. And those are completely randomized, which is cool, and sort of, like, give you an idea of, like, what these people might be like. And just can keep happening, and that's a cool new thing that's happened. Like, because the whole, like, by time thing is completely new too.
Yeah. Like, they have had stuff where, you know, there were random battles and random merchants on the world map before, but I don't think there's ever been, like, you know, you in the barracks you have chances to, like, your units just get some bonus experience or find an item that was lying around and stuff like that. So it's kind of like, you know, even when you're not playing it, there are little things going on that improve your guys.
Yeah.
Weird
little thing.
Okay, go
ahead. In the barracks, the, like, whoever's on the bottom screen and is like, oh, what are you doing here? That is time-based as well.
I noticed that last night when I was playing at, like, 1 in the morning, like, Donald was there and he was like, hey, RP, what are you doing? Like... shouldn't you be getting some sleep for the battle tomorrow?
You know, I noticed it over last night, too, because I was playing it last night, and, like, I had always seen them say, like, what are you doing up so late? You just getting your thoughts together? But then, like, I did that last night, and I turned it on this morning, and they were just like, good morning! What's going on? You're up early. And that's kind
of
cute.
It is really cute. A lot of things about this game are really cute.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest change to the combat mechanics, though, is there is a the pair up system.
Yeah.
In previous games you had the option to I think it was called rescue or something.
Yeah.
Where you could kind of stack units on top of each other and then use them to, you know, you could have your cavalry ride out and grab someone who is in danger and then ride them back, you know, to safety or whatever. But when they were stacked up, they didn't fight together or anything.
Yeah, that was purely a movement thing.
But in this game, when you have people side by side with each other, they can give each other like bonus dodge chance and critical chance and stuff based on their relationship. But when you stack them together, they also just share some of their stats.
Yeah.
And are guaranteed to build up their relationship as they fight.
Yeah.
So you can use it to like guarantee that you're building people's relationships. And there's also your tactician character, their like initial skill is when they're paired up with someone, they give the like the acting character more experience.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. I only noticed that.
Like, is that a skill that they start with?
Yeah, yeah.
My guy, I don't think, started with one, and I just unlocked one called Solidarity?
No, I think you should start... I think you should start with it.
Did you get Solidarity?
Yeah.
Okay. I can check.
He's checking now. That's the other thing that we didn't mention from the start. Unlike previous games, I don't know if they did this on any of the Wii ones, but you actually create your own character. You're not given... you know, just like a default or anything. So you can choose your gender, you can choose a preferred, and you get like a perk and a flaw stat.
Oh, yeah.
Which basically gives you, you know, a bonus and a deficit. And you start with a custom class called Tactician that can use swords and magic, which like nobody else can do, and it's really dope.
Yeah.
And then you can also use like class changing seals later on to change your person into any class that you want at all.
Yeah.
Aside from a couple gender specific ones.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I was checking and my team is so cool. Like, the whole pair up system is like, that's a new thing. Just like being able to fight together at all. Cause like up until this point, every match was like 1-on-1, which does offer a lot of interesting opportunity. Cause they also brought in the idea that when dudes are just adjacent to each other, they will join in on the same battle, even though they do not, like, share stat boosts of when they're actually sort of sharing a tile space and paired up together.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean that, like, you can basically have, like, three people sort of working together if, like, two are paired and then one is going to get helped by the main dude next to him. I think just that alone has actually added quite a bit to the sort of tactical aspect of the game. Especially then when you have to consider that, you know, there are only certain units that can attack diagonally.
Yeah, yeah.
And from a space away, where most units are just...
direct combat.
Yeah, direct adjacent tile fighters.
It opens a lot of tactical options, especially with like your faster mounted units and slower guys like the Armor Knights.
Yeah.
Because you can just have that Armor Knight like tag on with, you know, a Pegasus Knight or whatever that moves three spaces more than him. And because you can switch between like who's the active and who's the support character basically whenever you want in their turn, like you can have the Armor Knight jump on, move as the Pegasus, and then switch back to the Armor Knight for the battle.
Yeah.
It just opens up like a lot of options for you.
It basically almost like continues in the idea of like custom classing, because by combining two units, you're basically giving them, you know, perks of each other as long as you, you know, make the tactical choice of when to swap who's the active one.
Yeah. I really like what they're doing by making the relationship stuff more apparent and with the pair up stuff, because I think it almost gives it like the sort of not at the same level, but a similar kind of like personal investment that you might get from like Mass Effect or something like that. Because, you know, you're building all of these relationships between your characters, so you know, even between the two of us, like, I can say things about, you know, my Sully or whatever, and you can say things about your Frederick, and they almost become, you know, different unique characters just based on what we've been doing.
Yeah, which is really cool. Like, you know, the idea of two people having, you know, playing the same game and, like, having the same setup, but then having entirely different experiences. Like, we've said for a while that that's usually a sign of a pretty good game.
Yeah.
Also, just, you know, again, with the making your own character, like, that's like you, there's always sort of been like a tactician character that you take the role of, but you know, getting more customization on it, that's kind of cool. And also, you know, because it's the 3DS and it has all the street passing stuff, there's a lot more opportunity now. Basically, there's this idea that on the world map, you people that you street pass with, they will show up with a team, and then you can sort of challenge their team whenever you want. And if you win, or if you have enough money to just hire them, then their avatar, their tactician, will join your team.
Which is really cool.
Which is really cool. And, like, of course I want, like, to have a team of my friends with me all the time.
Yeah.
In addition to the friends I'm making who have, like, voices and stuff. So, like, pretty much once I have enough money to, like, pick you up, you're going to just be on my team. Probably
awesome.
A pretty, like, solid person.
Yeah, man. Like, I kind of want to class change my guy just to make it more, like, personalized.
Yeah.
But that tactician class is just really solid.
Yeah, swords and magic.
Yeah.
Come on. Although, I don't know, if I could get more swords.
Yeah. Like, you could just be like, no, I'm a Myrmidon now. Slashy, slashy.
Yeah, no, I'm... Because that's the, my, no, that was when I was playing the demo. I went with, the skill perk, and skill is what does crits.
Yeah.
This time I went with strength, though.
Okay.
But that's cool.
Yeah.
But it, just that, you know, this has come up a couple of times in previous days, but the idea of just, like, you know, something very personal that you bring into the game and comes with you, and it gives you, like, an extra connection to it.
Mm.
Who do you like to pair up? Well, like, you made your Crom marry Sully, right?
No, Sumia.
Sumia?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, what was Sully doing?
Sully has as much a relationship as she can have with my avatar, which is they can't get up to S rank because there is no homo love in this game, oh, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I haven't decided what I'm going to do with Sully. I haven't been using her as often because I've been trying to, like, level up people that I don't use, and
yeah.
She's just been, like, a really strong choice for me from the start, so she
yeah.
just eats a lot of experience.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means that she's really strong. My main project has been... One of the things that basically every Fire Emblem game does is give you a unit really early on who is underpowered but can level up to become just enormous. And in this game, that kid is Donald, who we just call Donnie, who starts out as, like, some kid who you pull off a farm that's under attack by bandits, and he's got, like, a rock, like a knife tied to a stick for a lance, and, like, a pot on his head for a helmet. But, like, I've leveled him up and class-changed him to become a swordsman, and he is the strongest and luckiest member of my army.
Yep.
So that's pretty great. And then, who else? There's, was it? I don't know how to pronounce that dude's name. Is it Lonk or Long Q or whatever?
I think it's Long Q, yeah.
I had him and Vake, who's like the big muscly axe men. They're like hetero life mates. Because like all of their support conversations are just like, hey man, I like the way you fight. You want to spar? Just like, whatever. You think you can take me? And then the next one is just like, hey, I've been training for, like, the past 2 weeks. I think I can take you now. And the last one is like, okay, man, but listen, if we're going to keep going like this, I'm not going to be your pupil. We have to be equals. And it's just like, all right, man, sounds good to me. Let's go fight everybody together.
Man, that's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, see, because my Sully, like, I just had her because cavalry units just
yeah.
everywhere, and that's a pretty good way to roll.
Yeah,
but like.
Fast.
For a while, she was getting pretty high with Stahl, and they were just like, you know what? We're, like, pretty good. It's all about getting better, you know? And they were like, yeah, all right, let's keep training. And it's, like, a whole thing of, like, her training him so that he just gets better because mm-hmm. she's just always on. That's the big thing with Stahl. Like, every, like, relationship he has is like, man, I really need to keep up with everybody.
Oh.
Except with Donnie, like, because, like, that's the thing. Like, as soon as I got Donnie, I was like, all right, Donnie, just hang out with Stahl. And they had this really cool thing where it's like, every time they have a conversation, it's just Stahl walking in, and Donnie's just like, well, I was trying to read magic, and I was, you know, using the sword yesterday, and I was trying to make friends with the Pegasuses, but then they kicked me and knocked my pot hat off. And it's just all the things about just like, you're like, Donnie, listen. Like, it's okay that you're not as good as anybody at, like, any one particular thing. Because, like, it's about how we all, like, have what little we can do. And it's about, like, everybody together is the best. Like, look at me. I'm not great at anything. I'm, like, the most milquetoast guy in town. And I'm awesome. So, you know. And then Donnie just starts trying to trick him into falling into his pitfall traps.
Yeah.
I mean, that was pretty good. But now they're maxed out. I got Sully and Crom up to A rank,
mm-hmm.
which is actually pretty interesting because they are like, they just keep going like sparring partners. And then also just like, man, we used to be childhood friends.
Yeah.
And we've always been equals. And it's like, that's actually a pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like a pretty cool story. Although I don't know if I want to go that way. Cause, so what is like the thing with S rank? People get married?
When you S rank, people get married.
Is that something that happened again just by, like, working them together so much? Or is it, like...
There's no special, like, requirement to get to S rank. It's just, like, just keep fighting together, and they'll get there.
Huh. So, but then, like, once you S rank with one person, that's it.
Yeah, I don't know if they can't S rank with anyone else, but I doubt that they'll get married to anyone else. Because I don't know if there is plural marriages in Elise or whatever.
See, like, that's the thing, like... I would almost believe it if the idea was like, well, because like, there's only S rank for the people you can get to S rank with, and yeah. I notice it's only on like alternate genders.
Yep.
So I have to imagine that like, which like, if you check them like on yours again and like check out their support page, and may have just taken the S off of everybody else.
No, the S's are still there for people who are married.
Really?
Yeah.
Because the only thing I could think of is like maybe it's like. Maybe marriage is only between specific characters, and it's not just like whoever you get to S first is marriage. But I would,
yes,
yeah.
I've like there are actually like there are some characters who, like early on, most of the ones that you start with, like they can all have support relationships with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the ones that I've gotten later on, like some of them just don't have anything on their support page for certain characters.
Really?
Like,
yeah,
like,
no,
these
I know
dudes
that some people have
be friends.
Like longer lists than other people, and that's yeah. kind of cool.
Like I was actually looking into it because somebody on Twitter was talking about Cherish the other day, and I was like, that looks like the most badass person in this game. Oh no, they can't be friends. Oh no.
That's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, but then when characters get married, eventually, like, you'll get more units in your army based on those marriages through, like, time travel or something. I'm not sure on the specifics of it, because I've tried not to look it up, but, like, I've seen a lot of people talking on Twitter, like, oh my god, I can't believe... Crom and Olivia's kid is so badass, and I'm just like, what the fuck are you guys talking about?
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like, the only other way, like, I almost said that maybe what they were talking about was, like, at some point in the storyline, there's, like, a time skip, so then it's just, like...
I mean, it's kind
like,
of
like, based on where you get people's support, like, and marriages before, like, that determines how many units you start with from level one again later on.
Ooh, that could be it. I don't think it's that, though.
I don't think it's that either, because that's, like... Basically resetting somebody's thing for the sake of... Although, because that was one thing from the previous Fire Emblems, or at least the one that I played. I think it was the one that wasn't Sacred Stones.
Mm-hmm.
The other one had, like, three separate storylines.
Oh, yeah?
That, like, were completely, like, were, like, similar times, but followed different people and, like, rarely had crossover.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not unheard of to just be like, now we're going to start a new story thread.
Sacred Stones was kind of like that, too. After a while, like, the two main characters are, like, these twin prince and princess.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, they both split off to do something else in the war.
Huh.
And you just pick, like, whose story are we following?
Oh, really?
And I'm pretty sure you never go back and play the other one unless you just start a new game.
Oh, that's crazy.
I spend a lot of time on Twitter talking about fucking Fire Emblem shipping.
Yeah.
It's a little despicable.
But there's some good ships.
Yeah. I'm not entirely happy with the second one that I did, which was Pan, who's like the Beast Girl and the Kid Magician.
Mm-hmm.
A, because... It's a little creepy. The kid looks like he's like 12.
Yup.
And B, not a lot of payoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah,
it's
like I don't know. Like, I'm hanging on to her because I want somebody cool to roll with her.
Hey, kid, you keep asking questions about, like, how fucked up it is that they're, like, I'm the only one of us left. Like, are you okay? And he's just like, it's just so sad. Just like, huh. I guess you're pretty all right for a man thing.
Yeah.
We're married now.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Like, especially because it's just like, here, take this ring. It'll signify that we're friends forever, even though that we, like, come from different places and stuff. Yeah, friends forever. And then you go to their status screen, and it's like, that's his wife.
Oh. Can I just mention, like, on the, like, the roster page in the barracks, the way that it lists, like, everyone's one defining trait at the bottom?
Yeah.
Like, the one with the curliest hair.
This person is the deepest sleeper in the army.
That's adorable.
Yep, it is.
Like, I don't know, sometimes, like, it's this really weird thing, like, I come to this game for, like, the tactics battle, the puzzleness. The same reason I go to a Super Robot Wars or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's this weird thing. Like, part of what keeps me going is wanting to see all of the support stuff.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's a lot of, like, small things that are, like, kind of clever, but I wouldn't really be, like... Like, there's not a lot to it. Like, there,
no.
Like, there is a storyline that has, like... Some sort of parallel dimension time. That's the thing. I would actually bet there's more of something to do with parallel dimensions.
Yeah.
Because her Marsh weapon was called the Parallel Falchion?
Yeah.
Falcon? How do you say that correctly?
Falchion, I believe. Falchion?
All right.
It's also not what that is, but...
Yeah.
See, I'm waiting for it to go berserk, where it's just like, you know, the storyline is like, okay, we're in this kingdom here, and it kind of has an atrocious past, but we have a new ruler now, and she's devoted to peace. But there are all these bandits on our border that are, like, posing as people from this other country trying to drag us into war. But it's really these other guys. And it's, like, all this, you know, inter-country, like, war, espionage, false flag shit.
Yeah.
But I'm still waiting for it at some point. It's just like, oh, demons were behind it.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's going to happen.
I mean, there was that one dude in, like, the castle siege mission.
Yeah.
Who really looked like a demon, and then...
Like, yeah, that guy could have been wearing, like, a red suit and holding a pitchfork for all of his pointy chin and arched eyebrows and everything.
And had a bird sidekick voiced by Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah, he did look like a Jafar, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
God damn it.
Actually, Jafar is... So, again, like, I really want to mention, like, they're doing DLC with this game.
Yeah.
Like, DLC on a portable platform, and they're doing, like, a pretty good job of it. Like, so, don't worry, this is connected.
Okay.
One of the things that they're doing is they are releasing, like, legendary hero packs.
Yep.
Which are basically, like, teams that they have created that you can summon to your world and then challenge them much as you would another player's Street Pass team. But they are... The leaders of these teams are characters from previous Fire Emblem games.
Yep.
Like Lin, who was the sort of main protagonist of...
Not Sacred Stones, but the other
one. Yeah, not Sacred Stones, the other one.
And Amelia, who was the, like, rookie soldier who got super strong in Sacred Stones.
Yeah. And
she's the best. I think it's Amelia.
I forget who it is, but, like, I just got to Pegasus Knight, who, when I played that Fire Emblem game, got taken out the turn she showed up. Now she's on my team. So it's kind of cool. They keep introducing, but what one of those dudes is a thief named Jafar.
Oh, I believe. Okay.
That is how that is connected.
Yeah, they actually also have, like, entire DLC missions with their own maps and stuff.
Yeah.
Which they're not, like, this game has been out in Japan for a while, and it has been really heavily supported there. Like, there is a lot of DLC map packs for it. They draw on a lot of, like, characters and stuff that have been in Fire Emblem games that we never even got.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure what changed Nintendo's mind, but they are pushing, like, they've been pushing Fire Emblem really hard ever since Brawl, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, Brawl was the first game that America saw Marth and Roy in. We didn't have those Fire Emblems. We had Brawl. You have all these DLC missions where you're, like, teaming up and fighting or fighting against, like... the ghosts of the heroes from previous Fire Emblem games.
Yep.
And I'm just like, I don't know who these people are. Yay.
I want to say, like, it's probably a lot to do with the success of, like, Advance Wars.
Mm.
And has Super Robot Wars had success? Like, we got...
It's not like it's a Nintendo property, so I don't know.
Yeah. But it was on Nintendo.
Have we gotten any of those?
Yeah, we've gotten two of them. We got two GBA ones.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, OG and OG 2.
Oh, right, OG.
But the thing is, you know.
Because those weren't, they didn't have any of the licensed shit. Because that's
thing,
a nightmare for, you
considering
know,
that
licensing.
Jay and Alpha Gaiden got, you know, pretty big projects for English translation fan patches things. Like, the fact that they got done, if they're aware enough to notice things like that, to be like, I guess people want stuff like this. And what's...
I kind of doubt it has anything to do with it.
I think we got a DS one that was, like, W and was another, like, all...
Didn't we get, like, a line-fighting
I think
Super
that was
Robot
that
Wars
one
with, like, crazy character designs?
Yeah, like, I think there was, like... the main character was basically the host from Big Shot for the Bounty Hunter from Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, God.
Or something.
I'm going to say Super Robot Wars probably has little to do with it.
I know. I like that series. Because that series had, like, the whole, like, support character thing.
Yeah,
about,
yeah.
Like, you know, three-person chain attacks. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
But we're getting this now, and it's being, you know, well-supported with DLC. It was a day one digital download in the eShop, which is fucking amazing.
But yeah, with that DLC, like, they already have released, like, three or four, like, I think they've released three new maps. A fourth one is coming, like, in a week or so. And the first one they're giving away for free until, like, March 6th.
Yeah.
And that's, like, really cool of them. Plus, like, all these bonus units, like, I'm looking at them, and there's probably, like, across two different games, there's maybe, like, 15 teams.
Yeah, like, you can recruit, like, if you don't like any of the guys in this game, recruit all the ones from an old game.
Yeah. Which is kind of, like, they work a little funky because they don't have any of the support stuff that you get with the characters from this game.
Yeah, they don't, like, have the support conversations.
They don't have support conversations. They don't have any voice acting. They don't have, like, a, what do you call it? Like, a proper profile picture for the, for, like, the cut-in bumper car segments.
Oh, really?
Bumper yeah. car? You described it that once when the cutouts move around and stuff.
Oh, okay.
They just, like, the sort of, like, trading tarot card-looking image of them is just, like, used in every spot where a portrait would normally be.
Okay.
Which ain't that bad, but also, like, you know, they're kind of trimmed down, but it seems that, like, if you lose one, you can just go back to, like, the Wi-Fi place and just, like, respawn them into your world. So if you need to get more units and have, like, money to burn, that's a decent way of doing it, it would seem.
If you killed off all of your cast, though, and are just going to the DLC place to get more characters to finish the game, you're missing out on a lot of game, though.
Can we talk for... I don't know how much we have left to say, but can we talk about the permanent death?
Sure.
Because this game has the casual mode.
Yep.
Which is a fairly new thing to the Fire Emblem series. The
yep.
Which basically, you know, takes out the permanent death.
Yeah, basically.
Just, if somebody dies, they will retreat from battle, but then they will not leave your army.
Yep.
I
think it fits with the greater focus on, like, the relationship stuff and generally making the game less obtuse and a bit easier.
Mm.
I was actually considering pretty heavily playing the game on casual.
Yeah.
Like, I had gotten a couple missions in, and I was having a lot of trouble. I was just kind of banging my head against, you know, a couple missions over and over again. And I was just like, you know, if I'm just going to save scum the entire game, I might as well just play on casual.
Yeah.
But I didn't, oddly enough. I kept going.
Yeah, like, that's kind of where I'm at. Like I'm right on the verge of just, like, well, I know how much I've done, and if I started over, I could probably play it pretty fast. Mm-hmm. Probably even faster because I'm not, you know, I wouldn't have to play it quite so gingerly.
Mm.
Basically, my only issue with it is people are saying, like, this is the way to play, that you're missing out if you...
Yeah.
Like, you're missing out if you don't have the permanent death, and I think they're wrong.
I mean, it does sort of change the level of tension that's in the game.
Yeah.
Like, we had the conversation the other day about this, actually. Like, you explained your point, though. I'm not going to explain your point for you.
Like, they've added in the casual mode, which I think is a good thing because it is, you know, makes it easier for people to get into the series and makes it more of a casual, you know, it is a casual thing. You're not completely worked up because permanent death. The problem is that there's no restart chapter button.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the thing. Like if there, I feel like there's a lot of people, like both of us, where if we lose any person, we're going to start over.
Yep.
So at one point, like, it makes it really hard because it's, you know, you do need to play the game to be like, you know, how do I do this without losing anybody? How do I be most cautious? What is, like, the correct move? But, like, by not having that, they're trying to say, you know, it's this weird thing. It's this idea of, like, well, no, like, if I feel like us playing it, because there is no restart chapter button, that is sort of the sensibility of the designers sort of implying that if we are restarting as soon as we lose one guy,
we're doing it wrong.
We are playing it less correctly than the people playing it on casual mode.
Mm.
Like, that's basically what the idea is. Because, but that sort of implies that, you know, there this idea of, like, well, if you lose somebody, you need to live with that. Which is thematic to other things. Because, like, you can only get specific pairs up to rank S, which means that, you know, you can play this game, and depending on choices you make, there are entire pieces of content that you will never see.
Mm.
And, you know, character debt is just, you know, that is a big punishment because there is a really big amount of content that you are never going to see, you know, if you're going to choose to take that content anyway.
Yeah. My reasoning for playing the game like this is kind of twofold. A, I enjoy the level of tension of, like, I know that if I fuck this up, you know, then, you know, the game is permanently changed by that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if I, you know, I need to do this mission somewhat perfectly, and I like that level of, not really difficulty, but just sort of the mindfulness.
Yeah, it changes the way you play.
But at the same time, like, on this first run of the game, like, I want to see as much of, you know, the relationship content and stuff like that. So, you know, losing units is going to block some of that off, which I don't want to live with at this point. Like, I could see myself doing, another run of this game on the harder difficulty. I'm playing on, you know, normal classic right now. And B, just sort of living with character death.
Yeah.
But for the first run where I just want to, you know, see what's in this game, I just want to see what's in the game, you know?
See, but, and that sounds like exactly
what casual mode is for.
Like, because, like, I sort of agree. Like, I like the challenge of it. Like, I just thought of this sort of comparison, but when we were talking about this off mic, I was trying to say that there is also a certain sort of tension to, like, you know, can I finish this battle with, like, the four remaining dudes because I've lost so many already? And Frozen Synapse kind of has that feel to it.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, you know, we start out with these small teams and, like, you know, but at that point there's no unique characters, so you don't really care the fact that there's, you know, quote unquote, a sense of permanent death. There's no response in that game.
Yeah.
So it would basically make it closer to something like that, where it's just like, all right, I lost that. I have this dude. He is capable of this. Can I finish the level with this? And there is a certain type of tension to that, which I really like.
Yeah, it's that sort of underdog story thing.
If I had goofed to the point where all I had left was Donnie with the log, that would make for, like, an amazing narrative experience, you know?
Yeah,
that is an amazing playthrough to wind up on. Which I think is valid, but it is a different mindset for playing. To like, allow yourself to have deaths. And so, like, the idea of, like, you know, either accepting death or save scumming, you know, either way, you're playing it that as soon as one character loses, like, you're trying to not lose any characters. It's never okay to lose anyone.
Another point of comparison, actually, I would bring up is XCOM, where I played that game, like, there is permanent, you know, soldier death in that game. I'm not going to say permanent character death, because it's not like, you know, there's nothing to those soldiers outside of, you know, what their combat capabilities are.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they have a name, they have a country of origin, and they have their skill tree, you know, and they have what they're currently equipped with. They don't have a backstory, they don't have conversations or anything. So I lived with character death in that game, as it was more of a gameplay concern in terms of, you know, I have this soldier, I've trained him up this much, he survived this many missions, I've made the investment now. You know, if I lose him, then it's because of my error and I deserve to lose that investment. But it's not like I'm missing out on, you know, written content because that dude's dead now.
It's the difference between, you know, wasting time invested in the past versus, you know, losing the opportunity to see content that is still ahead of you. If I could make a suggestion.
Sure.
Maybe have, like, because, like, permanent character death? Like, if that was the, like, hardcore option, perfect. Like, that makes a lot of sense. I would play it, and yeah, I would go into it being like, yeah, I'm going to accept character death, because that's whatever. You could have a double hardcore, which is like, no, that's the thing. Like, hardcore would be like, if one person loses, then it's over. Double hardcore would be...
That's already how I'm playing it.
But that's the thing. Double hardcore would be, if one person loses, you have to accept it. Like, like just force you to, like, not reload saves in that
mode.
Yeah,
even if you restart the game, like, it does a quick save right there.
Yeah.
God, that would be vicious.
But, you know, can we go somewhere between the casual and the classic mode where... I'm trying to think of there was a game that did this where if somebody gets taken out in battle, they're out for a number of turns. I think it was Valkyria Chronicles.
Yeah, yeah. They got sent to the sick bay.
Yeah. So like cuz you know,
that which was actually a departure from Valkron 1 where there was just permanent death.
Yeah. But that's the thing, cuz like that way like you'll it's the punishment is not like denying that content, it's putting it off.
Yeah, yeah.
Which also, you know, you're easier to accept that because it's not just gone. You still have the opportunity to see it. But at the same time, while you're waiting on that, you will be doing other things and pushing people. And if anything, I think that just encourages, like we both are sort of running into this place now, especially with how we're playing of like saves coming in, that there's a lot of units we have but don't use.
Yep.
Doing something like that would force us to cycle units and, if anything, encourage us to see more of that content.
And actually, I really like the Valkron system because... You know, just sort of temporarily removing that unit from combat, it gives you a gameplay consequence for a gameplay error.
Yeah.
You know, like because you fucked up, you know, tactically or whatever, now you don't have that option in combat, but they're still relevant to the story and everything. Like they're not removed from the narrative of the game.
Yeah. I want to say that's how one of the Fire Emblems handled it. Like they were just like, it wasn't that they were dead. Sometimes it was just that they were crippled.
It's just so that, like, they were, like, not fielded combat units anymore.
They could not show up in battle, and so they could not build support. But, like, they were still there in, like, story, like, core story cutscenes.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of okay, but, you know, you want to see that side stuff because that's interesting. It is an achievement to get to that.
Yeah.
Which is actually, like, sort of a weird thing to say just about, like, the way we play games in general. It's like, now, just to make it to the end of the game does not seem like an achievement anymore. That's,
yeah,
that's a mindset from the arcade era. Jeez. That's a mindset from the old Sonic games.
Yeah. I mean, I heard this the other day. It was actually Day 9 talking about it, oddly enough. You know, he said that, you know, we have games these days that you can play just continuously and have, like, these set experiences where there's no beginning or end. And then we have games where there is, like, a set beginning and end, but it's never, like, it's never really a question of, like, am I going to finish this? It's just, like, how much time is it going to take? But then, like, I don't know, look at, like, 8-year-old kids playing Mega Man 2. And it's, like, the one kid who's made it to Wily's Castle, and he knows what sounds like. And that's a huge reward, because it's so awesome.
Yeah. I kind of really like that, of just, like, you know, start fresh every time, it's how far can you get, and then just, like, yeah. I like playing Zone of the Enders that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fire Emblem is really good, you guys.
Yeah.
If you haven't gotten into the series before because it was kind of, like, imposing or, you know... Yeah, imposing, I guess, because, I mean, it does sort of have this legacy of, like, oh, this hardcore tactical permanent death, you know, fantasy thing. I can see people not getting into that. But Awakening is much more accessible. You know, there's an easier difficulty mode, there's the casual mode. If you do want the hardcore experience, there is a hard and then lunatic difficulty.
Yeah.
Which hard and lunatic is a naming convention that I am very fond of, for one. And it doesn't skimp on any of the tactical action, you know, to in service of, you know, the new relationship and shipping stuff.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of abundance. Like, it all works together to create a better game overall.
And that's the other thing. Like, if you were never into that sort of grid-paced tactical combat, you're still not going to like this, but if you want more of that, they've built more systems that feed into that core idea and are doing like a really good job of making more in-depth and sort of giving a lot of subtleties and a lot of choice, and it's really, really nice. I just wanted to mention something. They're also doing a good job. You don't have to worry about not playing any of the previous ones because the story is being very self-contained.
Yeah.
They are having like hints of like, oh, there was a great king, so it is like in the same continuity as everything.
Yeah.
But they're doing a really good job of like none of that really matters. And I would even go so far, I was thinking about this earlier, like they do the thing of, you know, your main character has amnesia, so everybody's like explaining things to him when need be. I feel they don't even need that.
Like, not really.
I think they're doing a good job of just, like, the way that the characters are written. Like, the way characters refer to each other. The way, like, it's like, I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to greet you with grand gestures. But then you're like, no, don't worry about it. I may be the king, but I'm not that grand. Like, they're doing a good job of, like, giving you cues as to how this society works and what the values are and what's important without having to info dump. Like, I think there's only been maybe, like, two points at which they've had to explain to the amnesia guy what's going on specifically.
Yeah, yeah.
And even then, it's just like, if you would just let that fly, I would have picked it up from context cues, and it would have been really, what's that word? Immersive. So that's Fire Emblem. You can get it on a cartridge. You can get it from the eShop. What was it? $40?
$40 in the eShop.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
It's got DLC. It's got street passing. The whole street passing thing.
Team up with your friends. Maybe fight your friends.
Fight your friends.
Buy, like, hire your friend's avatar to be in your army.
Buy stuff from your friends.
Yeah.
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 This game's really good. If you would like to join us in talking about how good this is, you can send us an email, podcast@leekustudios.net. Also, feel free to, you know, send us any feedback about the show. Tell us if you agree, if you disagree, any ideas you had. If there's anything you would like to hear us talk about or anything like that, feel free to stick that in there, too. There's a lot of other ways that you can talk to us. You can find us on Twitter @Aliku. You can find us at facebook.com/Aliku. You can find us at aliku.tumblr.com.
You can also find us in the iTunes Music Store. We'd be very happy if you wanted to leave us a rating or a review. You can also find us in the Zune Marketplace. We would not be happy if you left us a rating or a review there, because who owns a Zune, really?
I knew one person who owned a Zune.
Yeah?
Yeah.
If you want to send us your friend code, do so.
Yeah, you can. We'll be happy to probably put that out on our personal Twitters. I am @MasterElcom.
I am @Erpy. Spelled like how it sounds, if you know what letters sound like.
Yep. Little, symbology?
Nope.
No. Yeah, I think that'll do it.
Yeah.
All right. So, until next time, we're signing off and saying give credit where credit is 25 cents per play.